you are. Jasmine pulled Luce into their powwow. A plan is finally taking shape. Cool. How can I help? At 12 o'clock, we're going to ring that bell. Don pointed at a huge brass bell hung from a white beam by a pulley near the ship's bow. Then I'm going to welcome everyone. Amy's going to speak about how this trip came to be, and Jazz is going to talk about this semester's upcoming social events. All we need is someone to say something environmentally friendly. All three girls looked at Luce. Is this a hybrid yacht or something? Luce asked. Amy shrugged and shook her head. Don's face lit up with an idea. You could say something about how being out here is making us all greener, because he who lives closer to nature acts closer to nature. Are you any good at writing poems? Jasmine asked. You could try to make it, you know, fun. Guilty of totally bailing on any real responsibilities, Luce felt the need to be amenable. Environmental poetry, she said, thinking the only thing she was worse at than poetry and marine biology was public speaking. Sure, I can do that. Okay, phew. Dawn wiped her forehead. Then here's my vision. She hopped up on the ledge where she'd been sitting and started making a list of things on her fingers. Luce knew she should be paying attention to Dawn's requests. Wouldn't it be awesome if we lined up shortest to tallest? Especially since, in a very short time, she was slated to say something intelligent and rhyming about the environment in front of 100 of her classmates. But her mind was still clouded by that bizarre conversation with Francesca and Stephen. Leave the announcers to the experts. If Stephen was right, and there really was an announcer out there for every moment in history, well, that was like telling her to leave the entire past to the experts. Luce wasn't trying to claim expertise on Sodom and Gomorrah. It was just her own past, hers and Daniel's, she was interested in. And if anyone was going to be an expert on that, Luce figured it should be her. But Stephen had said it himself. There were a trillion shadows out there. It would be close to impossible to even locate the ones that had anything to do with her and Daniel, let alone know what to do with them if she ever found the right ones. She glanced up at the second-story deck. She could see only the tops of Francesca's and Stephen's heads. If Luce let her imagination run freely, she could make up a sharp conversation between them, about Luce, and about the announcers, probably agreeing not to bring them up with her ever again. She was pretty sure that when it came to her past lives, she was going to be on her own. Wait a minute. The first day of class, during the icebreaker, Shelby had said... Luce rose to her feet, forgetting completely that she was in the middle of a meeting and was already crossing the deck when a piercing scream rang out behind her. As she whipped around toward the sound, Luce saw a flash of something black dip off the bow of the boat. A second later, it was gone. Then a splash. Oh my God! Dawn! Both Jasmine and Amy were leaning halfway over the prow, looking down into the water. They were screaming. I'll get the lifeboat! Amy yelled, running into the cabin. Luce hopped up on the ledge beside Jasmine and gulped at what she saw. Dawn had tumbled overboard and was thrashing in the water. At first, her dark head of hair and flailing arms were all that was visible, but then she glanced up and Luce saw the terror on her white face. A horrible second later, a big wave overtook Dawn's tiny body. The boat was still moving, pulling further away from her. The girls trembled, waiting for her to resurface. What happened? Stephen demanded, suddenly at their side. Francesca was loosening a foam-ringed life preserver from its ties under the bow. Jasmine's lips quivered.
She was trying to ring the bell to get everyone's attention for the speech. She barely leaned out. I don't know how she lost her balance.
Luce took another painful glance over the ship's bow. The drop into the icy water was probably 30 feet. There was still no sign of Dawn.
Where is she? Luce cried. Can she swim?
Without waiting for an answer, she grabbed the life preserver out of Francesca's hands, looped one arm through it, and climbed to the top of the bow.
Luce, stop!
She heard the cry behind her, but it was already too late. She dove into the water, holding her breath, thinking on her way down of Daniel and their last dive at the lake. She felt the cold in her ribcage first, a harsh tightening around her lungs from the shock of the temperature. She waited until her descent slowed, then kicked for the surface. The waves poured over her head, spewing salt into her mouth and up her nose, but she clutched the life preserver tight. It was cumbersome to swim with, but if she found Don, when she found Don, they would both need it to stay afloat while they waited for the lifeboat. She could vaguely sense a clamoring up on the yacht, people shouting and scurrying around the deck, calling down to her. But if Luce was going to be any help to Don, she had to tune all of them out. Luce thought she saw the dark dot of Don's head in the freezing water. She tore forward, against the waves, toward it. Her foot connected with something. A hand? But then it was gone, and she wasn't sure whether it had been Don at all. Luce couldn't go underwater while holding on to the life preserver, and she had a bad feeling that Don was deeper down. She knew she shouldn't let go of the life preserver, but she couldn't save Don unless she did. Tossing it aside, Luce filled her lungs with air, then plunged down deep, swimming hard until the surface warmth disappeared and the water became so cold it hurt. She couldn't see a thing, just grasped everywhere she could, hoping to reach Don before it was too late. It was Don's hair that Luce felt first, the thin shock of short, dark waves. Probing lower with her hand, she felt her friend's cheek, then her neck, then her shoulder. Don had sunk pretty far in such a short time. Luce slipped her arms under Don's armpits, then used all her strength to pull her up, kicking powerfully toward the surface. They were far underwater, the daylight a distant shimmer. And Don felt heavier than she could possibly be, like a great weight was attached to her, dragging both of them down. At last, Luce broke the surface. Don sputtered, spewing water out of her mouth and coughing. Her eyes were red, and her hair was matted on her forehead. With one arm looped across Don's chest, Luce gently paddled them both toward the life preserver. "Luce," Don whispered. In the tumbling waves, Luce couldn't hear her, but she could read her lips. "What's happening?" "I don't know." Luce shook her head, straining to keep them both afloat.
"Swim to the lifeboat."
The call came from behind, but swimming anywhere was impossible. They could barely keep their heads above water. The crew was lowering an inflatable life raft. Stephen was inside it. As soon as the boat met the ocean, he began paddling briskly toward them. Luce closed her eyes and let the palpable relief wash over her with the next wave. If she could just hold on a little longer, they were going to be okay.
"Grab my hand," Stephen shouted to the girls.
Luce's legs felt like she'd been swimming for an hour. She pushed Don toward him so that Don could be the first one out. Stephen had stripped down to his slacks and white Oxford shirt, which was wet now and clinging to his chest. His muscled arms were huge as he reached for Don. His face red with exertion, he grunted and heaved her up. When Don was draped over the gunwale, far enough that she wouldn't fall back in, Stephen turned and quickly took hold of Luce's arms. She felt weightless, practically soaring out of the water with his help. It was only when she felt her body slipping the rest of the way into the boat that she realized how sopping wet and freezing she was, except for where Stephen's fingers had been. There, the drops of water on her skin were steaming. She sat up, moving to help Stephen pull the shivering Don the rest of the way into the raft. Exhausted, Don could barely drag herself upright. Luce and Stephen each had to take her by an arm and heave. She was almost all the way inside the boat when Luce felt a shocking jerk pull Don back into the water. Don's dark eyes bulged, and she cried out as she slipped backward. Luce was not prepared. Don slipped out of her wet grip, and Luce fell back against the side of the raft.
"Hold on!"
Stephen caught hold of Don's waist just in time. He stood up, almost capsizing the raft. As he strained to lift Don out of the water, Luce saw the briefest flash of gold extend from his back. His wings. The way they jutted out instantly at the moment when Stephen needed the most strength, it seemed to happen almost against his will. They were gleaming, the color of the kind of expensive jewelry Luce had only seen behind glass cases at department stores. They were nothing like Daniel's wings. Daniel's were warm and welcoming, magnificent and sexy. Stephen's were raw and intimidating, jagged and terrifying. Stephen grunted, the muscles in his arms strained, and his wings beat just once, giving him enough upward momentum to fly Don out of the water. The wings stirred up enough wind to flatten Luce against the other side of the raft. As soon as Don was safe, Stephen's feet touched down again on the floor of the raft. His wings immediately slid back into his skin. They left two small tears in the back of his dress shirt, the only proof that what Luce had seen had been real. His face was washed out, and his hands were shaking. The three of them collapsed inside the raft. Dawn had noticed nothing, and Luce wondered whether anyone watching from the boat had either. Stephen looked at Luce as if she'd just seen him naked. She wanted to tell him it had been startling to see his wings. She hadn't known until then that even the dark side of the fallen angels could be so breathtaking. She reached for Dawn, partly expecting to see blood somewhere on her skin. It really felt like something had taken her in its jaws, but there was no sign of any wound.
"Are you okay?" Luce finally whispered.
Dawn shook her head, sending droplets of water flying off her hair.
"I can swim, Luce. I'm a good swimmer. Something had me. Something..."
"It's still down there," Stephen finished, picking up the paddle and hauling them back toward the yacht.
"What did it feel like?" Luce asked. "A shark, or..."
Dawn shuddered.
"Hands."
"Hands?"
"Luce," Stephen barked.
She turned to him. He seemed like a different being than the one she'd been talking to minutes earlier on the deck. There was a hardness in his eyes she'd never seen before.
"What you did today was..."
He broke off. His dripping face looked savage. Luce held her breath, waiting for it. Reckless, stupid, dangerous.
"Very brave," he finally said,
his cheeks and forehead relaxing into their usual expression. Luce exhaled, having a hard time even finding the voice to say thank you. She couldn't take her eyes off Dawn's trembling legs, and the rising thin red marks that looped around her ankles, marks that looked like they'd been left by fingers.
"I'm sure you girls are scared," Stephen said quietly. "But there's no reason to bring a general hysteria upon the whole school. Let me have a talk with Francesca. Until you hear from me, not a word about this to anyone else. Dawn?"
The girl nodded, looking terrified.
"Luce?"
Her face twitched. She wasn't sure about keeping this secret. Dawn had almost died.
"Luce?"
Stephen gripped her shoulder, removed his square-framed glasses, and stared into Luce's hazel eyes with his own dark brown ones. As the life raft was winched up to the main deck where the rest of the school waited, his breath was hot in her ear.
"Not a word. To anyone. It's for your own protection."
7. 12 days.
"I don't get why you're being so weird," Shelby said to Luce the next morning. "You've been here, what, 6 days? And you're Shoreline's biggest hero. Maybe you're going to live up to your reputation after all."
The Sunday morning sky was dotted with cumulus clouds. Luce and Shelby were walking along Shoreline's tiny beach, sharing an orange and a thermos of chai. A strong wind carried the earthy scent of old redwoods down from the woods. The tide was rough and high, kicking up long swaths of knotted black seaweed, jellyfish, and rotting driftwood into the girl's path. "It was nothing," Luce muttered, which wasn't exactly true. Jumping into that icy water after dawn had certainly been something. But Stephen, the severity of his tone, the force of his grip on her arm, had put a fear into Luce about ever speaking of Dawn's rescue. She eyed the salty foam left in the wake of a receding wave. She was trying not to look out at the deep, dark water beyond, so she wouldn't have to think about hands down in its icy depths. "For your own protection." Stephen must have meant "your" in its plural form, as in it's for all the students' protection. Otherwise, if he only meant Luce... "Dawn's okay," she said. "That's all that matters."
Yeah, because of you, Baywatch."
"Do not start calling me Baywatch."
"You prefer to think of yourself as a jack-of-all-trades kind of savior?"
Shelby had the most deadpan way of teasing.
"Frankie says some mystery creep's been lurking around the school grounds the past 2 nights. You should give him what for."
"What?" Luce almost spat out her chai.
"Who is it?" "I repeat, mystery creep. They don't know."
Shelby took a seat on a weathered flat of limestone, skipping a few stones expertly into the ocean.
"Just some dude. I overheard Frankie talking to Kramer about it on the boat yesterday, after all the hoopla."
Luce sat down next to Shelby and began to root around in the sand for stones. Someone was sneaking around Shoreline. What if it was Daniel? It would be just like him. So stubborn about keeping his own promise not to see her, but unable to stay away. The thought of him made her yearn for him that much more. She could feel herself almost on the brink of tears, which was crazy. Odds were the mystery creep wasn't even Daniel. It could be Cam. It could be anyone. It could be an outcast.
Did Francesca seem worried? She asked Shelby.
Wouldn't you be?
Wait a minute. Is that why you didn't sneak out last night?
It was the first night Luce hadn't been woken up by Shelby coming in through the window.
No.
Shelby's skipping arm was toned from all her yoga. Her neck stone skipped 6 times in a wide arc, coming almost all the way back to them, like a boomerang.
Where do you go every night, anyway?
Shelby stuffed her hands in the pockets of her puffy red ski vest. She was staring at the gray wave so intensely that it was clear she'd either seen something out there, or she was avoiding the question. Luce followed her gaze, almost relieved to see nothing in the water but gray and white waves all the way to the horizon.
Shelby?
What? I don't go anywhere.
Luce started to stand up, annoyed that Shelby felt she couldn't tell her anything. Luce was brushing damp sand from the backs of her legs when Shelby's hand tugged her back down onto the rock.
Okay, I used to go see my sorry-ass boyfriend.
Shelby sighed heavily, pitching a rock artlessly into the water, nearly pelting a fat seagull swooping down for a fish.
Before he became my sorry-ass ex-boyfriend.
Oh, Shell, I'm sorry.
Luce chewed on her lip.
I didn't even know you had a boyfriend.
I had to start keeping him at arm's length. He got way too into the fact that I had a new roommate. Kept bugging me to let him come over late at night. Wanted to meet you. I don't know what kind of girl he thinks I am. No offense, but 3's a crowd in my book.
Who is he? Luce asked. Does he go here?
Philip Avs. He's a senior in the main school.
Luce didn't think she knew him.
That pale kid with the bleached blonde hair, Shelby said. Kind of looks like an albino David Bowie. You can't really miss him.
Her mouth twitched.
Unfortunately.
Why didn't you tell me you broke up?
I prefer downloading Vampire Weekend songs that I lip-sync to when you're not around. Better for my chakras.
Besides, she pointed a stubby finger at Luce, you're the one being all moody and weird today. Daniel treating you wrong or something?
Luce leaned back on her elbows.
That would require us actually seeing each other, which apparently we aren't allowed to do.
If Luce closed her eyes, she could let the sound of the waves take her back to the very first night she'd kissed Daniel. In this lifetime. The humid tangle of their bodies on that languishing savanna boardwalk. The hungry pressure of his hands pulling her in. Everything seemed possible then. She opened her eyes. She was so far away from all of that now.
So, your sorry-ass ex-boyfriend?
No.
Shelby made a zip-it motion with her fingers.
I don't want to talk about SAEB any more than I guess you want to talk about Daniel. Next.
That was fair. But it wasn't exactly that Luce didn't want to talk about Daniel. It was more like, if she started talking about Daniel, she might not be able to shut up. She already sounded like a broken record in her own mind, cycling on repeat through the total of, 4 physical experiences she'd had with him in this life. She chose only to start counting once he stopped pretending she didn't exist. Imagine how quickly she would bore Shelby, who'd probably had tons of boyfriends, tons of experience, compared to Luce's next to none. One kiss she could barely remember, with a boy who'd burst into flames, a handful of very hot moments with Daniel, that just about summed it up. Luce was certainly no expert when it came to love. Again, she felt the unfairness of her situation. Daniel had all these great memories of them together to fall back on when things got rough. She had nothing. Until she looked up at her roommate.
Shelby?
Shelby had her puffy red hood pulled over her head and was poking a stick into the wet sand.
I told you I don't want to talk about him.
Poking a stick into the wet sand.
I told you I don't want to talk about him.
I know. I was wondering, remember when you mentioned that you knew how to glimpse your past lives?
This was what she'd been about to ask Shelby when Dawn fell overboard.
I never said that.
The stick plunged deeper into the sand. Shelby's face was flushed, and her thick blonde hair was frizzing out of her ponytail.
Yes, you did.
Luce tilted her head.
You wrote it on my paper. That day when we were doing the icebreaker, you grabbed it out of my hands and said you could speak more than 18 languages and glimpse past lives, and which one did I need you to fill out?
I remember what I said.
but you misunderstood what I meant.
Okay, Lou said slowly. Well,
just because I have glimpsed a past life before doesn't mean I know how to do it, and it doesn't mean it was my own.
So it wasn't yours?
Hell no. Reincarnation is for freaks.
Luce frowned and dug her hands into the wet sand, wanting to bury herself in it.
Hello, that was a joke.
Shelby nudged Luce playfully.
Tailored especially for the girl who's had to go through puberty 1,000 times.
She grimaced.
Once was enough for me, thank you very much.
So Luce was that girl, the girl who'd had to go through puberty 1,000 times. She'd never thought about it that way before. It was almost funny. From the outside, going through endless puberty seemed like the worst part of her lot. But it was so much more complicated than that. Luce started to say she'd go through 1,000 more pimples and hormone fluctuations if she could look into her past lives and understand more about herself. But then she looked up at Shelby.
If it wasn't yours, then whose past life did you glimpse?
Why are you being so nosy? Damn. Luce could feel her blood pressure rising.
Shelby, oh my God, throw me a bone.
Okay, Shelby said finally, making a chill-out motion with her hands. I was at this party one night in Corona. Things got pretty crazy. Half-naked seances and shit and... Well, that's not really the story. So I remember taking a walk to get some air. It was raining, hard to see where I was going. I turned the corner in an alleyway, and there was this guy, kind of beat-up looking. He was bent over a sphere of darkness. I'd never seen anything like it, shaped like a globe, but glowing, kind of floating above his hands. He was crying.
What was it?
I didn't know then, but now I know it was an announcer.
Luce was mesmerized.
And you saw some of the past life he was glimpsing? What was it like?
Shelby met Luce's eyes and swallowed.
It was pretty gruesome, Luce.
I'm sorry, Luce said. I was only asking because...
It felt like a big deal to admit what she was about to admit. Francesca would definitely be opposed to this. But Luce needed answers, and she needed help. Shelby's help.
I need to glimpse some of my past lives, Luce said. Or I need to at least try. Things have been happening recently that I'm supposed to just accept because I don't know any better. Only I could know better, a lot better, if I could just see where I come from, where I've been. Does that make any sense?
Shelby nodded.
I need to know what I had in the past with Daniel so I can feel sure of what I have with him now.
Luce took a breath.
That guy, the one in the alley, did you see what he did to the announcer?
Shelby scrunched her shoulders.
He just sort of guided it into shape. I didn't even know what it was at the time, and I don't know how he tracked it down. That's why Francesca and Stephen's demonstration freaked me out so much. I saw what happened that one night, and I've been trying to forget about it ever since. I had no idea that what I was seeing was an announcer.
If I could track down an announcer, do you think you could guide it?
No promises, Shelby said, but I'll give it a shot. You know how to track them down?
Not really, but how hard can it be? They've been haunting me all my life.
Shelby cupped her hand over Luce's on the rock.
I want to help you, Luce, but it's weird. I'm scared. What if you see something you shouldn't?
When you broke up with SAEB...
I thought I told you not to.
Just listen. Aren't you glad you figured out whatever it was that made you break up with him sooner rather than later? I mean, what if you got engaged or something and only then...
Blech!
Shelby put up a hand to stop Luce.
Point taken. Now come on, find us a shadow.
Luce led Shelby back across the beach and up the steep stone stairs, where dashes of battered red and yellow verbenas had pushed up through the wet sandy soil. They crossed the neat green terrace, trying not to interrupt a group of non-Nephilim students in a game of ultimate frisbee. They passed their third-story dorm room window and wound around the back of the building. At the edge of the forest of redwoods, Luce pointed to a space between the trees.
That's where I found one the last time.
Shelby marched into the forest ahead of Luce, shoving through the long, claw-like leaves of the vine maple trees among the redwoods and stopping under a giant fern. It was dark under the redwoods, and Luce was glad of Shelby's company. She thought back to the other day, how quickly time had passed while she was harassing that shadow, getting nowhere. Suddenly, she felt overwhelmed. "If we can find and catch an announcer, and if we can even get a glimpsing to work," she said, "what do you think the chances are that the announcer will have anything to show about me and Daniel? What if we just get another awful Bible scene like we saw in class?" Shelby shook her head. "Daniel, I don't know about. But if we can summon and then glimpse an announcer, then it will have to do with you. They're supposed to be summoner-specific, though you won't always be interested in what they have to say. Like how you get junk mail mixed with your important mail, but it's still addressed to you." "How can they be summoner-specific? That would mean Francesca and Stephen were at the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah." "Well, yeah, they have been around forever. Rumor has it their resumes are pretty impressive." Shelby stared oddly at Luce. "Put your bug eyes back in your head. How else do you think they scored jobs at Shoreline? This is a really good school." Something dark and slippery moved over them, a heavy cloak of an announcer stretching sleepily in the lengthening shadows from the limb of a redwood tree. "There," Luce pointed, not wasting any time. She swung herself up onto a low branch that stretched behind Shelby. Luce had to balance on one foot and lean out all the way to the left just to graze the announcer with her fingertips. "I can't reach it." Shelby picked up a pine cone and pitched it at the center of the shadow, where it draped down from the branch. "Don't," Luce whispered. "You'll piss it off." "It's pissing me off being so coy. Just hold out your hand." Grimacing, Luce did as she was told. She watched the pine cone ricochet off the shadow's exposed side, then heard the soft swishing sound that used to fill her ears with dread. One side of the shadow was sliding, very slowly, away from the branch. It slipped off and landed across Luce's shaking, extended arm. She pinched its edges with her fingers. Luce hopped off the branch where she'd been standing and approached Shelby, her cold, musty offering in her hands. "Here," Shelby said. "I'll take half and you take half, just like we saw in class." "Ew, it's squishy." "Okay, loosen your grip. He's not going anywhere. Let him just kind of chill and take shape." It seemed like a long time passed before the shadow did anything at all. Luce felt almost like she was playing with the old Ouija board she'd had as a kid. An inexplicable energy on the tips of her fingers, the feeling of slight, continual movement before she could see any difference in the announcer's shape. Then there was a whoosh. It was contracting, folding slowly in on its dark self. Soon the whole thing had taken on the size and shape of a large box. It hovered just above their fingertips. "Do you see that?" Shelby gasped. Her voice was almost inaudible over the whooshing sound of the shadow. "Look, there, in the middle." As it happened during class, a dark veil seemed to lift off the announcer, revealing a shocking burst of color. Luce shielded her eyes, watching as the bright light seemed to settle back inside the shadow screen into a foggy, out-of-focus image, then, finally, into distinct shapes in muted colors. They were looking at a living room, the back of a blue plaid recliner with a footrest kicked up and a badly fraying bottom corner. An old wood-paneled television airing a rerun of Mork and Mindy with the volume off. A fat Jack Russell Terrier curled on a round patchwork rug. Luce watched a swinging door push open from what looked like a kitchen. A woman, older than Luce's grandmother had been when she died, walked through. She was wearing a pink and white patterned dress, heavy white tennis shoes, and thick glasses on a string around her neck. She was carrying a tray of cut fruit. "Who are these people?" Luce wondered aloud. When the old woman put down the tray on the coffee table, a liver-spotted hand extended from around the chair and selected a chunk of banana. Luce leaned in to see more clearly, and the focus of the image shifted with her, like a 3D panorama. She hadn't even noticed the old man sitting in the recliner. He was frail, with a few thin patches of white hair and age spots all over his forehead. His mouth was moving, but Luce couldn't hear a thing. A row of framed pictures lined the mantle of the fireplace. The whooshing in Luce's ears got louder, so loud it made her wince. Without her doing anything other than wonder about those pictures, the announcer's image zoomed in. It left Luce with a feeling of whiplash, and an extreme close-up of one framed photograph. A thin, gold-plated frame around a smudged glass plate. Inside, the small photograph had a fine scalloped border around a yellowing black-and-white image. Two faces in the photograph, hers and Daniel's. Holding her breath, she studied her own face, which looked just a little younger than it did now. Dark, shoulder-length hair set in pin curls, a white blouse with a Peter Pan collar, a wide A-line skirt brushing the middles of her calves, white-gloved hands holding Daniel's. He was looking directly at her, smiling. The announcer started vibrating, then quaking, then the image inside started to flicker and fade away. "No," Luce called, ready to lunge inside. Her shoulders connected with the edge of the announcer, but that was as far as she got. A brush of bitter cold pushed her back and left her skin feeling damp. A hand clamped around her wrist. "Don't get any wild ideas," Shelby warned. Too late. The screen went black, and the announcer dropped from their hands onto the forest floor, shattering into pieces like broken black glass. Luce suppressed a whimper. Her chest heaved. She felt like a part of her had died. Lowering herself to all fours, she pressed her forehead to the ground and rolled onto her side. It was colder, murkier than it had been when they'd started. The watch on her wrist said it was after 2 o'clock, but it had been morning when they came into the forest. Looking west, toward the edge of the woods, Luce could see the difference in the light hitting the dorm. The announcers swallowed time. Shelby lay down next to her. "You okay?" "I'm so confused. Those people..." Luce cupped her forehead. "I have no idea who they are." Shelby cleared her throat and looked uncomfortable. "Don't you think, maybe you used to know them? Like, a long time ago? Like, maybe they were your..." Luce waited for her to finish.
"My what?"
"It really hasn't occurred to you that those were your parents from another life? That this is what they look like now?"
Luce's jaw dropped open.
"No. Wait, you mean I've had totally different parents in each of my past lives? I thought Harry and Doreen... I just assumed they would have been with me the whole time."
Suddenly she remembered something Daniel had said about her mother making bad boiled cabbage in that past life. At the time, she hadn't dwelled on it, but now it made a little bit more sense. Doreen was an amazing cook. Everyone in East Georgia knew that. Which meant Shelby must be right. Luce probably had a whole nation of past families she couldn't even remember.
"I'm so stupid," she said. Why hadn't she paid more attention to the way the man and woman looked? Why hadn't she felt the slightest connection to them? She felt like she'd lived her whole life and only now found out she was adopted. How many times had she been handed off to different parents?
This is...
"Totally messed up," Shelby said. "I know. On the bright side, you could probably save yourself a lot of money for therapy if you could look back at all your other families, see all the problems you had with hundreds of mothers before this one."
Luce buried her face in her hands.
"That is, if you need family therapy."
Shelby sighed.
"Sorry, who's talking about themselves again?"
She raised her right hand, then slowly put it down.
"You know, Shasta's not that far from here."
"What's Shasta?"
"Mount Shasta, California. It's just a few hours that away."
Shelby jerked her thumb toward the north.
"But the announcers only show the past. What would be the point of going there now? They're probably..."
Shelby shook her head.
"The past is a broad term. Announcers show the distant past right up to the events happening seconds ago, and everything in between. I saw a laptop on the desk in the corner, so there's a good chance, you know."
"But we don't know where they live."
"Maybe you don't. Me, I zoomed in on a piece of their mail and got the address. Committed it to memory. 1291 Shasta Shire Circle, apartment 34.
Shelby shrugged.
"So, if you wanted to go visit them, we could totally drive there and back in a day."
"Right," Luce snorted. She desperately wanted to go visit them, but it just didn't seem possible.
"In whose car?"
Shelby laughed a faux sinister little laugh.
"There was only one thing that wasn't sorry-ass about my sorry-ass ex-boyfriend."
She dug into the pocket of her sweatshirt, pulling out a long keychain.
"And that was his very sweet Mercedes, parked right here in the student lot. Lucky for you, I forgot to give him back the extra key."
They tore down the road before anyone could stop them. Luce found a map in the glove compartment and traced the line up to Shasta with her finger. She called out some directions to Shelby, who drove like a bat out of hell,
but the maroon Mercedes almost seemed to like the abuse. Luce wondered how Shelby was staying so calm. If Luce had just broken up with Daniel and borrowed his car for the afternoon, she wouldn't be able to stop herself from remembering road trips they'd taken, or arguments they'd gotten into while driving to a movie, or what they'd done in the back seat that one time with all the windows rolled down. Surely Shelby was thinking about her ex. Luce wanted to ask, but Shelby had been clear that the topic was off limits. "Are you going to change your hair?" Luce asked finally, remembering what Shelby had said about getting over breakups. "I could help you, if you are." Shelby's face pinched into a scowl. "That freak's not even worth it." After a long pause, she added, "But thank you." The drive took most of the rest of the afternoon, and Shelby spent it working herself up, bickering with the radio, scanning the channels for the craziest nutjobs she could find. The air got colder, the trees thinned out, and the elevation of the landscape rose steadily the whole time. Luce focused on staying calm, imagining 100 scenarios about meeting these parents. She tried to avoid thinking about what Daniel would say if he knew where she was going. "There it is," Shelby pointed when a massive snow-capped mountain came into view, directly in front of the road. "The town sits right in those foothills. We should be there just after sunset." Luce didn't know how to thank Shelby for hauling her all the way up here on a whim. Whatever was behind Shelby's shift in attitude, Luce was grateful. She wouldn't have been able to do this on her own. The town of Shasta was wacky and artistic, with a good number of elderly people walking leisurely down the wide avenues. Shelby rolled down the windows and let in the brisk early evening air. It helped settle Luce's stomach, which was knotting up at the prospect of actually having to talk to the people she'd seen in the announcer. "What am I supposed to say to them? Surprise, I'm your daughter, back from the dead," Luce practiced aloud as they were sitting at a stoplight. "Unless you want to totally freak out a sweet old couple, we're going to have to work on that," Shelby said. "Why don't you pretend you're a solicitor just to get in the door and feel them out?" Luce looked down at her jeans, beat-up tennis shoes, and purple backpack. She didn't look like a very impressive salesperson. "What would I sell?" Shelby started to drive again. "Hawk car washes or something cheesy like that. You can say you've got vouchers in your bag. I did that one summer, door-to-door. Almost got shot." She shuddered, then looked at Luce's white face. "Come on, your own mom and dad are not going to shoot you. Oh, hey, look, here we are." "Shelby, can we just sit in silence for a little while? I think I need to breathe." "Sorry." Shelby pulled into a large parking lot facing a compound of small, single-story connected bungalow-style buildings. "Breathing, I can do." Through her nerves, Luce had to admit it was a pretty nice place. A series of the bungalows stood in a semicircle around a pond. There was a main lobby building with a row of wheelchairs lined up outside the doors. A big banner read, "Welcome to Shastashire Retirement Community." Her throat felt so dry it hurt to swallow. She didn't know if she even had it in her to say two words to these people. Maybe it was one of those things you just couldn't think about too much. Maybe she needed to get up there and force her hand down on that knocker and then figure out how to act. "Apartment 34. Shelby squinted at a square stucco building with a red Spanish tile roof. "That looks like it over there. If you want me to wait in the car till I get back, that would be great. Thanks so much. I won't be long." Before Luce could lose her nerve, she was out the car door and jogging up the winding sidewalk toward the building. The air was warm and filled with a heady scent of roses. Cute old people were everywhere, split into teams on the shuffleboard court near the entrance, taking an evening stroll through a neatly pruned flower garden next to the pool. In the early evening light, Luce's eyes strained as she tried to locate the couple somewhere in this crowd, but no one looked familiar. She would have to go straight to their house. From the footpath leading up to their bungalow, Luce could see a light on through the window. She stepped closer until she had a clearer view. It was uncanny, the same room she'd seen earlier in the announcer, even down to the fat white dog asleep on the rug. She could hear dishes being washed in the kitchen. She could see the thin, brown-socked ankles of the man who'd been her father, however many years ago. He didn't feel like her father. He didn't look like her father, and the woman hadn't looked at all like her mother. It wasn't that there was anything wrong with them. They seemed perfectly nice, like perfectly nice strangers. If she knocked on the door and made up some lie about car washes, would they become any less strange? No, she decided. But that wasn't all. Even though she didn't recognize her parents, if they really were her parents, of course they would recognize her. She felt stupid for not thinking about that before. They'd take one look at her and know she was their daughter. Her parents were much older than most of the other people she'd seen outside. The shock of it might be too much for them. It was too much for Luce, and this couple had about 70 years on her. By then, she was pressed against their living room window, crouching behind a spiny sagebrush cactus bush. Her fingers were dirty from gripping the windowsill. If their daughter had died when she was 17, they must have been mourning her for close to 50 years. They'd be at peace with it by now, wouldn't they? Luce popping up uninvited from behind a cactus plant would be the very last thing they needed. Shelby would be disappointed. Luce herself was disappointed. It hurt to realize that this was as close as she was ever going to get to them. Hanging on the windowsill outside her former parents' house, she felt the tears roll down her cheeks. She didn't even know their names. 8. 11 days. 2. The GA prices at AOL.com. From LucindaP44 at gmail.com. Sent Monday, November 15, at 9:49 a.m. Subject, hanging in there. Dear Mom and Dad, I'm sorry I've been out of touch. Things at school have been busy, but I'm having a lot of good experiences. My favorite class these days is humanities. Right now I'm working on an extra credit assignment that takes up a lot of my time. I miss you guys and hope to see you soon. Thanks for being such great parents. I don't think I tell you that enough. Love, Luce. Luce clicked send on her laptop and quickly switched her browser back to the online presentation Francesca was giving at the front of the room. Luce was still getting used to being at a school where they handed out computers, complete with wireless internet, right in the middle of class. Sword and Cross had a total of 7 student computers, all of which were in the library. Even if you managed to get your hands on the encrypted password to access the web, every site was blocked, except for a few dry academic research ones. The email to her parents had been prompted by guilt. The night before, she'd had the strangest feeling that merely by driving out to the retirement community in Mount Shasta, she was cheating on her real parents, the ones who had raised her in this lifetime. Sure, at some point, these other parents had been real, too. But that was still too strange a thought for Luce to really absorb. Shelby hadn't been 1/10 as pissed off as she could have been about driving Luce all the way up there for no reason. Instead, she just fired up the Mercedes and drove to the nearest In-N-Out Burger so they could get a couple of off-the-menu grilled cheese sandwiches with special sauce. "Do not give it a second thought," Shelby said, wiping her mouth with a napkin. "Do you know how many panic attacks my screwed-up family's given me? Believe me, I'm the last person who's going to judge you about this." Now Luce looked across the classroom at Shelby and felt an intense gratitude for the girl who, a week before, had terrified her. Shelby's thick blonde hair was pulled back by a terry cloth headband, and she was taking diligent notes on Francesca's lecture. Every screen Luce could see in her peripheral vision was fixed on the blue and gold PowerPoint presentation that Francesca was clicking through at a snail's pace. Even Dawn's. She looked especially spunky today, in a hot pink t-shirt dress and a high-side ponytail. Was it possible she'd already recovered from what had happened on the boat? Or was she covering up the terror she must have felt, and maybe still felt? Glancing over at Roland's monitor, Luce scrunched up her face. It didn't surprise her that he'd been mostly invisible since he arrived at Shoreline, but when he did turn up in class, she was actually upset to see her former reform school cohort following the rules. At least Roland didn't look especially interested in the lecture on career opportunities for Nephilim, how your special skills can give you a wing up. In fact, the look on Roland's face was more disappointed than anything else. His mouth was set in a frown, and he kept lightly shaking his head. Also strange was the fact that every time Francesca made eye contact with the students, she distinctly passed over Roland. Luce pulled up the class chat room board to see whether Roland was logged on. It was supposed to be a tool for the class to bounce questions off each other, but the questions Luce had for Roland were not for class discussion. He knew something, something more than he'd let on the other day. Surely it had to do with Daniel. She also wanted to ask him where he'd been on Saturday, whether he'd heard about Don's trip overboard. Except Roland wasn't online. The only other person in the class who was logged on to the chat room was Miles. A text box with his name on it popped up on her screen.
"Hello, over there."
He was sitting right next to her. Luce could even hear him chuckling. It was cute that he got a kick out of his own dumb jokes. This was exactly the kind of goofy, teasing rapport she would love to have with Daniel. If he weren't so brooding all the time. If he were actually around. But he wasn't. She wrote back, "How's the weather in your neck of the woods?"
"Getting sunnier now," he typed, still smiling.
"Hey, what'd you do last night? I swung by your room to see if you wanted to grab dinner." She looked up from her computer, straight at Miles. His deep blue eyes were so sincere, she had an urge to turn to spill everything about what had happened. He'd been so amazing the other day, listening to her talk about her time at Sword and Cross. But there was no way to answer his question via chat. As much as she wanted to tell him, she didn't know whether she should talk about it. Even letting Shelby in on her secret project was practically wooing trouble from Stephen and Francesca. Miles's expression changed from his normal casual smile into an awkward frown. It made Luce feel terrible, and also slightly surprised that she could elicit this kind of reaction in him. Francesca clicked off the projector. When she crossed her arms over her chest, the pink silk sleeves of her peasant blouse bloomed out of her cropped leather jacket. For the first time, Luce noticed how far away Stephen was. He was seated on the windowsill at the western corner of the room. He'd barely said a word in class all day.
"Let's see how well you paid attention," Francesca said, smiling widely at the students. "Why don't you break up into pairs and take turns conducting mock interviews?"
At the sound of all the other students rising from their chairs, Luce groaned internally. She'd heard next to nothing of Francesca's lecture and had no idea what the assignment was. Also, she knew she was just squatting in the Nephilim program temporarily, but was it too much to ask for her teachers to remember every once in a while that she wasn't like the rest of the kids in the class? Miles tapped her computer screen where he had messaged her.
"You want to partner up?"
Just then, Shelby appeared.
"I say we do CIA or Doctors Without Borders," Shelby said.
She motioned for Miles to surrender the desk next to Luce. Miles stayed put.
"There's no way I'm fictitiously applying for some lame dental hygienist position."
Luce looked back and forth between Shelby and Miles. Both of them seemed to feel proprietary about her, something she hadn't realized until now. Truthfully, she wanted to be partners with Miles. She hadn't seen him since Saturday. She'd kind of been missing him. In a friendly way. Like in a "let's catch up over a cup of coffee" way. More than a "let's wander along the beach at sunset and you can smile at me with those incredible blue eyes" way. Because she was with Daniel, she didn't think about other guys. She definitely didn't start blushing intensely in the middle of class while reminding herself that she didn't think about other guys.
"Is everything okay over here?"
Stephen laid his tan palm on Luce's desk and gave her a big, brown-eyed, you-can-tell-me nod. But Luce was still nervous around him after what he'd said to her and Don on the life raft the other day. Nervous enough that she'd even avoided bringing it up again with Don.
"Everything's great," Shelby responded.
She took Luce by the elbow and jerked her toward the deck, where some of the other students were paired up, already conducting their mock interviews.
"Luce and I were just about to talk resumes."
Francesca appeared behind Stephen.
"Miles," she said softly. "Jasmine still needs a partner, if you'd like to pull up a desk next to her."
A few desks down, Jasmine said,
"Don and I couldn't agree on who should play Indie Starlet, and who should play," her voice dropped an octave, "casting director. So she abandoned me for Roland."
Miles looked disappointed.
"Casting director," he mumbled. "Finally, I've found my calling."
He headed off to join his partner, and Luce watched him go. With the situation diffused, Francesca steered Stephen back to the front of the room. But even as he walked beside Francesca, Luce could feel him watching her. She subtly checked her phone. Callie still hadn't texted her back. This wasn't like her, and Luce blamed herself. Maybe it would be better for both of them if Luce just kept her distance. It was only for a little while. She followed Shelby outside to a seat on the wooden bench built into the curve of the deck. The sun was bright in the clear sky, but the only part of the deck that wasn't already packed with students was under the cool shade of a towering redwood. Luce brushed a layer of dull green needles off the bench and zipped her chunky sweater a little higher on her neck. "You were really cool about everything last night," she said in a low voice. "I was freaking out."
"I know," Shelby laughed. "You were all..." She made a trembling zombie face.
"Give me a break. That was rough. My one chance to learn something about my past, and I totally choked."
"You Southerners and your guilt." Shelby gave a one-shouldered shrug. "You gotta cut yourself some slack. I'm sure there are plenty more relatives where those two old geezers came from. Maybe even some who aren't so close to death's door."
Before Luce's face could collapse, Shelby added,
"All I'm saying is, if you ever feel up for tracking down another family member, just say the word. You're growing on me, Luce. It's kind of weird."
"Shelby," Luce whispered suddenly through clenched teeth, "don't move." Beyond the deck, the biggest, most ominous announcer Luce had ever seen was rippling in the long shadow cast by an enormous redwood tree. Slowly, following Luce's eyes, Shelby looked out at the ground. The announcer was using the real shadow of the tree as camouflage. Parts of it kept twitching.
"It looks sick, or skittish, or I don't know."
Shelby trailed off, curling her lip.
"There's something wrong with it, right?"
Luce was looking past Shelby at the staircase, winding down to the ground level of the lodge. Below them were a bunch of unpainted wooden supports that propped up the deck. If Luce could get hold of the shadow, Shelby could join her under the deck before anyone saw anything. She could help Luce glimpse its message, and they could make it back upstairs in time to rejoin the class.
"You're not seriously considering what I think you're seriously considering," Shelby said.
"Are you?" "Keep watch up here for a minute," Luce said. "Be ready when I call you." Luce descended a few steps so that her head was just level with the deck, where the rest of the students were busy carrying out their interviews. Shelby had her back to Luce. She'd give a sign if anyone noticed Luce was gone. Luce could hear Dawn in the corner ad-libbing with Roland.
"You know, I was stunned when I was nominated for a Golden Globe."
Luce looked back at the darkness stretched out along the grass. It occurred to her to wonder whether the other students had seen it. But she couldn't worry about that. She was wasting time. The announcer was a good 10 feet away, but where she stood, close to the deck, Luce was shielded from the other students' eyes. It would be too obvious if she walked right over to it. She was going to have to try to coax it off the ground and over to her without using her hands. And she had no idea how to do that. That was when she noticed the figure leaning up against the other side of the redwood tree, also hidden from the view of the students on the deck. Cam was smoking a cigarette, humming to himself like he didn't have a care in the world, except that he was covered entirely in blood and gore. His hair was matted to his forehead, his arms were scratched and bruised, his t-shirt was wet and stained with sweat, and his jeans were splattered too. He looked filthy and disgusting, as though he'd just emerged from battle. Only there was no one else around, no bodies, no anything. Just Cam. He winked at her.
"What are you doing here?" she whispered. "What did you do?"
Her head swam from the sick reek coming off his bloodied clothes.
"Oh, just saved your life, again. How many times does this make?"
He tapped ash off his cigarette.
"Today it was Miss Sophia's crew, and I can't say I didn't enjoy it. Bloody monsters. They're after you too, you know. Word has gotten out that you're here, and that you like to wander into that dark forest unchaperoned."
He pointed.
"You just killed them?"
She was horrified, glancing up at the deck to see whether Shelby or anyone could see them.
"No." "A couple of them, yes, just now, with my own two hands."
Cam showed off his palms, caked with something red and slimy that Luce really did not want to see.
"I agree the woods are lovely, Luce, but they're also full of things that want you dead. So do me a favor."
"No, you don't get to ask me for favors. Everything about you disgusts me."
"Fine," he rolled his eyes. "Then do it for Grigori. Stay on campus."
He flicked his cigarette onto the grass, rolled back his shoulders, and unfurled his wings.
"I can't always be here to watch over you, and God knows Grigori can't."
Cam's wings were tall and narrow and pulled tight behind his shoulders, sleek and gold and flecked with brindled stripes of black. She wished they repulsed her, but they didn't. Like Stephen's wings, Cam's were jagged, rough. They, too, looked as though they'd survived a lifetime of fights. The black stripes gave Cam's wings a dark, sensual quality. There was something magnetic about them. But no, she loathed everything about Cam. She would forever. Cam beat his wings once, lifting his feet off the ground. The wings' flapping was tremendously loud and kicked back a swirl of wind that raised leaves from the ground. "Thank you," Luce said crisply, before he coasted under the deck. Then he was gone in the shadows of the woods. Cam was protecting her now? Where was Daniel? Wasn't Shoreline supposed to be safe? In Cam's wake, the announcer, the reason Luce had come down here in the first place, spiraled up from its shadow like a small black cyclone. Closer. Then a little closer still. Finally, the shadow wandered into the air just over her head. "Shelby," Luce whispered loudly. "Get down here." Shelby looked down at Luce, at the cyclone-shaped announcer teetering over her. "What took you so long?" she asked, sprinting down the stairs just in time to watch the whole massive announcer tumble down, straight into Luce's arms. Luce screamed, but luckily Shelby clapped a hand over her mouth. "Thank you," Luce said, her words muffled against Shelby's fingers. The girls were still huddled three steps down from the deck, in plain view of anyone who might cross over to the shady side. Luce couldn't straighten her knees under the weight of the shadow. It was the heaviest one she'd ever touched, and the coldest on her skin. It wasn't black, like most of the others, but a sickly greenish-gray. Parts of it were still twitching, lighting up like bolts of distant lightning. "I don't have a good feeling about this," Shelby said. "Come on," Luce whispered. "I summoned it. Now it's your turn to do the glimpsing." "My turn? Who said anything about me having a turn? You're the one who dragged me down here." Shelby waved her hands, like the last thing on earth she wanted to do was touch the beast in Luce's arms. "I know I said I'd help you track down your relatives, but whatever kind of relative you've gotten here, I don't think either of us wants to meet." "Shelby, please," Luce begged, groaning from the weight, the chill, and the general nastiness of the shadow. "I'm not an Nephilim. If you don't help me, I can't do this."
"What exactly are you trying to do?"
A voice behind them from the top of the stairs. Stephen had his hands clamped down on the banister and was glaring at the girls. He seemed larger than he did in class, towering over them, as if he had doubled in size. His deep brown eyes looked stormy, but Luce could feel the heat coming off them, and she was scared. Even the announcer in her arms trembled and edged away. Both girls were so startled, they screamed. Jarred by the sound, the shadow bolted from Luce's arms. It moved so fast she had no chance to stop it, and it left nothing behind but a freezing, foul-smelling wake. In the distance, a bell rang. Luce could sense all the other kids trooping off toward the mess hall for lunch. On his way out, Miles stuck his head over the railing and peered down at Luce, but he took one look at Stephen's red-hot expression, widened his eyes, and moved along.
"Luce," Stephen said, more politely than she expected. "Would you mind seeing me after school?"
When he lifted his hands off the railing, the wood beneath them was scorched black. Stephen opened the door before Luce even knocked. His gray shirt was a bit wrinkled, and his black knit tie was loosened at the neck. But he had regained the appearance of serenity, which Luce was beginning to realize took effort for a demon. He wiped his glasses on a monogrammed handkerchief and stepped aside.
"Please come in."
The office wasn't big, just wide enough for a large black desk, just long enough for three tall black bookshelves, each one crammed with hundreds of well-worn books. But it was comfortable and even welcoming, not like what Luce had imagined a demon's office would be like. There was a Persian carpet in the center of the room, a wide window looking east at the redwoods. Now, at dusk, the forest had an ethereal, almost lavender hue. Stephen sat down on one of two maroon desk chairs and motioned for Luce to take the other. She surveyed the framed pieces of art, jigsawed onto every spare inch of the wall. Most of them were portraits in varying degrees of detail. Luce recognized a few sketches of Stephen himself and several flattering depictions of Francesca. Luce took a deep breath, wondering how to begin.
I'm sorry I summoned that announcer today.
Have you told anyone about what happened with Dawn in the water?
No. You told me not to.
You haven't told Shelby, Miles.
I haven't told anyone. He considered this for a moment.
Why did you call the announcers the Shadows the other day when we were talking on the boat?
It just slipped out. When I was growing up, they always were part of the Shadows. They'd detach and come to me. So that's what I called them before I knew what they were. Luce shrugged. Stupid, really.
It's not stupid.
Stephen stood up and went to the farthest bookshelf. He pulled down a thick book with a dusty red cover and brought it back to the desk. Plato, The Republic. Stephen opened it to the exact page he'd been looking for, turning the book right side up in front of Luce. It was an illustration of a group of men inside a cave, shackled beside one another, facing a wall. A fire blazed behind them. They were pointing at the shadows cast on the wall by a second group of men who walked behind them. Below the image, a caption read, "The Allegory of the Cave." "What is this?" Luce asked. Her knowledge of Plato started and ended with the fact that he piled around with Socrates.
"Proof of why your name for the announcers is actually quite smart."
Stephen pointed at the illustration.
"Imagine that these men spend their lives seeing only the shadows on this wall. They come to understand the world and what happens in it from these shadows, without ever seeing what casts the shadows. They don't even understand that what they are seeing are shadows."
She looked just beyond Stephen's finger to the second group of men. "So they can never turn around, never see the people and things creating the shadows?"
"Exactly. And because they can't see what is actually casting the shadows, they assume that what they can see, these shadows on the wall, are reality. They have no idea that the shadows are mere representations and distortions of something much truer and more real."
He paused.
"Do you understand why I'm telling you this?"
Luce shook her head. "You want me to stop messing with the announcers?" Stephen closed the book with a snap, then crossed to the other side of the room. She felt as if she disappointed him somehow.
"Because I don't believe you will stop messing with the announcers, even if I do ask you to. But I do want you to understand what you're dealing with the next time you summon one. The announcers are shadows of past events. They can be helpful, but they also contain some very distracting, sometimes dangerous distortions. There's a lot to learn. A clean, safe summoning technique. Then, of course, once you've honed your talents, the announcer's noise can be screened out, and its message be heard clearly through..."
"You mean that whooshing noise? There's a way to hear through that?"
"Never mind, not yet."
Stephen turned and sank his hands into his pockets.
"What were you and Shelby after today?"
Luce felt flushed and uncomfortable. This meeting was not going at all as she'd expected. She thought maybe detention, some trash pickup. "We were trying to learn more about my family," she finally managed to get out. Thankfully, Stephen seemed to have no idea she'd seen Cam earlier. "Or my family's, I guess I should say."
"That's all."
"Am I in trouble?"
"You weren't doing anything else."
"What else would I be doing?" It shot through her mind that Stephen might think she was reaching out to Daniel, trying to send him a message or something, as if she'd even know how to do that.
"Someone won now,"
Stephen said, opening the window. It was past dusk, and Luce's stomach told her that most of the other students would be sitting down to dinner.
I don't know if I can."
Stephen's eyes looked warmer than they had earlier, excited almost.
"When we summon announcers, we're making a sort of wish. Not a wish for anything material, but a wish to better understand the world, our role in it, and what's to become of us."
Immediately, Luce thought of Daniel, what she wanted most for their relationship. She didn't feel she had much of a role in what was to become of them, and she wanted one. Was that why she'd been able to summon the announcers before she'd even known how? Nervously, she centered herself in her chair. She closed her eyes. She imagined a shadow detaching itself from the long darkness that stretched from the tree trunks outside, imagined it rolling away and rising, filling the space of the open window, then floating closer to her. She smelled the soft, mildewy scent first, almost like black olives, then opened her eyes at the brush of coolness on her cheek. The temperature in the room had dropped a few degrees.
Stephen rubbed his hands together in the suddenly damp, drafty office.
Yes, there you go, he murmured.
The announcer was drifting in the air of his office, thin and transparent, no bigger than a silk scarf. It glided straight toward Luce, then wrapped a fuzzy tendril of nothingness around a blown glass paperweight on the desk. Luce gasped. Stephen was smiling when he stepped toward her, guiding it upright until it became a blank, black screen. Then it was in her hands, and she began to pull. The careful motion felt like trying to stretch out a pie crust without breaking it, something Luce had watched her mother do.